Good morning. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti, and you're listening to The Current. We've been talking about some very specific mental health issues over the last few weeks, in large part because of the overwhelming responses we're getting from our listeners and the stories you have brought to our attention. We'll continue that exploration this morning with the story of one family struggling to get the help and support it needs. Well, for more than a decade, my next two guests have struggled with their daughter's behavior. She has been diagnosed with a variety of mental and behavioral conditions. She has been charged in a violent confrontation with police. Children's Aid is investigating. And her parents say they feel they've been hung out to dry by a system that has nothing to offer a girl who desperately needs help. Under the Youth Criminal Justice Act, we are not allowed to give you the girl's name, and we are withholding her parents' names as well in order to comply with that law. But they are with us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Maybe we could begin by having you tell me a little bit about your daughter.
Absolutely. Our daughter is 13 years old, and she has very complex and comorbid mental health disorders and behavioral disorders. She is a child that has a hairpin trigger. She is not able to live and understand the limits and boundaries that are set for her. So she turns to violent acts. She will lash out. She will assault people. She will break furniture. She will break doors in our home. She has not been able to go to school since the end of grade 6 on a full-time basis. She has relationship problems with her peers, with her parents, with her grandparents, with community workers, anybody who sort of wants to put a limit or a boundary, and she is not willing to accept that limit or boundary, and she just loses complete control of herself, and she will often black out and not have any recollection of what happened or what precipitated the issue and what caused her to have that complete and utter meltdown. She's had meltdowns from the time she was really young, and most recently her acts down in a Utah treatment-based facility were so enormous that they could not cope with the behaviors, and they transferred her to a primary children's care center down in Utah.
Okay, well, let's back up then. You make the point that she can get quite violent. Has she ever been violent against either one of you?
Yes, she has.
Can you tell me what happened?
She has taken runs at us. She punches us. She will kick us. She'll try to bite us.
She gouged my arm there a couple of weeks ago that left some pretty nasty scrapes and gouging it in my arm.
And a week before she did that to her father, she punched me in the face and she chipped my tooth and then she caused my lip to bleed and swell. It makes it very, very difficult to parent because you're always walking around on eggshells because you don't want the explosion and you don't want the behaviors. And we understand that she's a teenager, and so, yes, teenagers at this age are rebellious, but it's 1,000 times worse than what it would be for a normal teenager.
It's beyond rebellious.
I can hear pain in your voice. This is your kid. You never thought that you'd have to deal with all this anger and...
Absolutely not. You know, we have a lot of pain because we love our daughter so much, and we've recognized for a number of years now that the child needs help, and trying to get that help as far as like inpatient treatment goes, there is nothing in Ottawa, and there's really nothing in the province of Ontario for our daughter. That was actually decided by the Ministry of Health. They approved our daughter to go down to a U.S.-based treatment facility.
Yeah, why did that happen?
We found out about 12 months ago that the province of Ontario will pay for a child or an adult to go down to a treatment facility down in the U.S. as long as you can prove to the Ministry of Health that you've exhausted all services available, appropriate services available. And the original application was submitted by a doctor at CHEO that had intimately worked with the family for 8.5 years.
That's the Children's Hospital of Eastern Ontario.
That's right.
Okay.
So the original application went in and it was denied, and so we entered the appeal process, and I took on the appeal process on my own with a couple of advocates in the city to help me put the package together, and we managed to put 1,800 pages of documents together, and we sent it to the Health Appeal Board, and within a week of them receiving the information in November, they approved her for treatment. And so
they approved her for treatment in the United States.
In the United States, in Utah.
Okay.
And
so, can we just back up for
sure.
a second? They approved her because there's no help for her here. No one will take her.
That's right.
Why?
Because she's so extreme. The Children's Hospital of Eastern Ontario has said that they don't have the resources or the manpower to treat a child with the complex and comorbid disorders that our daughter has. That they are a more of a stabilization unit at CHEO than an actual treatment facility. They offer outpatient services, and outpatient has been fantastic for us, but it's just not enough.
But what do they suggest you do other than send her to another country?
They have no other. Yeah, exactly. They have no other suggestions.
And you said comorbid disorder. Maybe you better tell me what has she been diagnosed with?
Absolutely, she's got nonverbal learning disability, which means that she's gifted in the in verbal language, but she and the arts. But she is very debilitated as far as reading nonverbal cues and understanding nonverbal language skills and social
body language
and how to effectively communicate with other people. She's also got ADHD, and she's got sensory and self-regulation problems, and she's got a mood disorder, and she also has what they've coined as disruptive behavior disorder.
Does she also have something called oppositional defiance disorder?
That was her first diagnosis when she was three.
She
was 3 years old with the first diagnosis.
How did you know that you needed to take her somewhere to be diagnosed when she was three?
Because of the full-blown meltdowns, the full-blown rages, the reports coming in from the licensed daycare center that she was at, she was unmanageable.
So you have had this problem with her, you know, all her life.
Absolutely. Yeah. We suspected from a very young age that there was, you know, there was definitely gifts there. She's extremely literate and extremely verbal, but there was always the behaviors. It didn't matter where we took her. She would have these behaviors, and like she wouldn't get invited to birthday parties at school. She was never included.
Did she scare the other kids?
Absolutely. She scared the other kids. And
did people blame you?
Yes. Yes, they did.
Tell me about that.
Well, we've been blamed by a few different doctors over the years that, we're a dysfunctional family, that we don't know how to parent our daughter, that if we were better parents, then we wouldn't have a child that's got these mental health disorders. But we don't diagnose our daughter. And we don't prescribe medications for our daughter.
Is she on medication?
She is on medication right now.
But have you blamed yourself?
Absolutely.
What do you say?
What
have you said to yourselves?
Well,
I don't know if we blame ourselves as much as we're feeling more helpless than anything, because we're sort of hit a stone wall right now. And right now our daughter's in CAS custody. That's Children's Aid Society custody. Because they think we're abusive parents, and all this is, coming on our shoulders instead of them acknowledging that there really is a problem. They're even questioning doctors right now.
They've been very uncooperative as far as them being willing to listen. She's only had three psychiatrists since the age of three. The psychiatrists that our daughter has visited and has been a patient of, all feel the same kind of frustration that we face as parents, because there isn't the long-term care or the residential treatment for a child as complex. And despite the efforts of the Children's Hospital to have her admitted on a number of occasions for stabilization, it never amounted to long-lasting effects for our daughter within our home.
I want to pick up on that. So you can get her to a psychiatrist. She can be diagnosed. She can be on medication.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no facility in the country?
There's two facilities in the province of Ontario, and they're both run through the courts. One is Robert Smart here in Ottawa, Robert Smart Center, And then there's a center in Oakville that I'm not sure what the name is. But these children, in order to get into this program, they have to have committed such a serious crime against humanity or pose such a serious risk of health and safety for other people to get admitted. There's 10 criteria. Our daughter was, she didn't meet all the criteria. She only met 5 of the 10 to get into Robert Smart.
So you're telling me that the mental illness is not severe enough for the most severe facility, but it is too severe for other facilities?
Absolutely.
So you're falling through a big crack.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's not the doctors that don't feel that she doesn't meet the criteria.
Who is it then?
It's the system.
What, the bureaucrats?
The bureaucrats.
Who have to sign off on what the doctors say.
Absolutely.
Which brings us back to the issue of Utah. So you applied to send her to a facility in Utah.
I had one discussion or a couple of discussions with them down there asking them, like, what kind of children do you accept? And they say that we take the worst of the worst and we rehabilitate. And I said, well, my daughter is the worst of the worst. Like, she's very extreme. She's got very extreme behaviors. You know, she doesn't do well with being directed and being told what she needs to do. And they told us, you have no worries about it, Mom, that we take the worst of the worst, and you would be amazed at how we rehabilitate these children.
So she went to Utah. What happened?
When she arrived in Utah, she went in fighting. She didn't submit to their program. They needed to do a search of her baggage and her person, and she was very upset about that fact. It was a negative experience right from the get-go, right from the moment that she entered onto their property. And within 24 hours, they were calling us, telling us that she was far too extreme for their program, and they wanted to transfer her to another program down in the United States. And then we said, well, can you not just wait like another 24, 48 hours? Maybe she'll settle. She did settle within the next 24 hours, and they said, okay, you know, she says she wants treatment now. She says she wants help. Well, that only lasted maybe a couple of hours, and she had another full-blown meltdown down there. She assaulted their staff. She put holes in their walls. When we asked her what happened, she told us that they were abusive towards her down there, that they were not nice people, that they wouldn't let her do what she wanted. And we said to her, we don't believe that you're being abused, and she was emphatically insisting that she was. This went on for a period of 9 days.
And then what happened?
We got a call from the facility, and we were told that they had to call the state police because my child was so violent. They were waiting for the ambulance to arrive so they could transport the child to a more acute care facility, because they were no longer able to manage the behaviors from within their four walls. So for 3 days, we had to, you know, talk to many people and get it coordinated and wipe out the liability for transport to get our daughter from the hospital to the airport.
To get her home.
To get her home.
So you had to take her home.
Yes, we had to bring her home.
Okay, now who was paying for all of this?
The Ontario government was paying the treatment facility in the United States.
Why were they paying?
Because they admitted that there was no treatment up here for our daughter, and that this was warranted and it was necessary.
Before she left for Utah, your daughter wrote a letter to the Children's Aid Society. You said she's with the Children's Aid Society now. What's the connection? What happened there?
Our daughter has always been fairly sexually promiscuous, but with her turning 12 and 13,
puberty onset,
she became very hypersexual, and she got herself involved with a boy that was almost 4 years older than she was. And originally, when we had applied for out-of-country treatment for our child, she was for it because we told her what was going on, and she was very anxious and excited about the possibility of going to a different country and different state and meeting new people. And then she became involved with this boy, and she decided in September, we had an argument in the home, and there was a lot of strife about the boy and her behaviors and stuff. And so she got upset with us, and she decided that she was going to write a letter to a lawyer that she found on Google. And she told this lawyer that we had abused her, that she wanted to be emancipated from her parents, that she wanted power of attorney over herself so she could make her own decisions. She never once thought that it would end up in the hands of child welfare authorities. Children's Aid became involved. They tried to apprehend our child. She told them that she lied and why she lied. CS wouldn't accept it. The Children's Aid Society then put a flag on any outpatient services or police services that if they were called to the home, that they were to be notified. November, she was caught skipping school with the boy, and there was major upset at the home, and she kicked out our basement window, and I had no choice but to call the Ottawa police because I was worried she was going to put her foot through the patio door. And the Ottawa police came, and they said they immediately had to call Children's Aid. And we had little choice but to enter into a temporary care, voluntary care agreement with the society, because other than that, they were going to take our child away from us. So we thought, well, this is probably the best case scenario.
This happened before she went to Utah.
That's right.
So you had to bring her home from Utah.
That's right.
You said she's back in she's in their custody now?
Yes, she is in their custody.
And why is that?
Because they feel that the parents are a danger to the child. The judge allowed our daughter to speak to him yesterday.
What did she say?
She said to him, I am very sorry that I'm here. I'm very sorry that I lied to the lawyer back in October.
About abuse by her parents?
She explained to them why she did that. She explained that to the court yesterday. And the judge looked at our daughter. And the judge said to her, I'm sorry, I can sympathize with you, but I have no control over what Children's Aid does, and you're going into their care today.
You do understand when a young person alleges that and then recants that an organization like CS would have a responsibility to investigate it and not just take then that at face value.
Absolutely, but they didn't want to investigate.
Are they not investigating now?
No.
What you seem to be saying here is that there's no one place to go to get help for a very troubled girl.
Yes.
Maybe you can just talk to me a little bit about what that's doing to you as a couple.
We have been together for many years. It's incredible that we are still together with a child such as our daughter. We've cried a lot over the last 10 years. We keep at it. It feels hopeless. It feels like there's no hope. And when you don't have hope, there's not a lot to hang on to help your child.
What about actually even paying for if you found a place? I mean, what's hanging here?
We physically don't have the cash flow to fund something like this. We have not heard from the Ministry of Health except for them to tell us that the funding agreement was ended and the child was discharged.
Okay, and even if they did fund it, but you're saying you don't know of any place in Ontario
to
send her, but has anyone helped you look anywhere else in the country?
No.
So you don't know that there's not another facility somewhere else in Canada?
That's right. We don't know that.
And no doctor can tell you that?
No doctor has the time to research that kind of thing.
And no government department can tell you that?
No government department. We've asked.
The Ministry of Health?
I've asked.
And what do they say to you?
There's no response. There's no response.
So what do you do?
Exactly. This is where we sit, where it's like being on a big hamster wheel. You just keep going round and round and round and round, and you never make any headway. And the child continues to go downhill and continues to get worse and continues to be more violent. And she is a risk to herself, and she is a risk to others. And without the treatment, the writing is on the wall that our daughter is going to fall through the cracks. She's going to end up on the streets, and she's going to end up having to do what she has to do to keep herself alive. We do worry about her taking her life because she has threatened suicide on a number of occasions and attempted on a number of occasions. And there's just no help. There's no treatment. We show up at the Children's Hospital of Eastern Ontario, and the Ottawa police have also brought our daughter into the Children's Hospital of Eastern Ontario. under a Section 17 of the Mental Health Act to have her admitted because she's a danger to herself or others, and Children's Hospital turns her away.
You must see, as you drive down a street or whatever, you must see young teenage girls.
Absolutely.
I wonder what you think when you see them and you think about your daughter.
I think about them, and I think that how nice it would be to have one of those girls that, you know, we could love and we could parent, because it doesn't matter how much love we have for our daughter, it hasn't helped. And it breaks my heart. And I reach out to other girls to try and, you know, help them, the girls that aren't as at as much risk, to try and help me to take some solace in the fact that I'm not a bad parent. Her father is not a bad parent. I didn't see a young girl on the street corner while we were walking in here, but we did see a homeless young man out on the street. And I said to her father, this is going to be our daughter in a couple of years. This is where she is going to be.
Mm.
You know, it's heart-wrenching. It really is. It's very difficult.
Do you, I don't know if your husband wants to say anything.
No, I'm in total agreement with everything that she has said. I don't know. We just keep beating our heads against the wall and just hoping, you know, we'll put a crack in it. But that's about all we can do right now.
You know, I don't know what to say to you. I just want to thank you for talking to me.
Yeah, we thank you very much, because the reason why we're speaking out publicly, even though some people don't want us to speak out publicly, is there's more than just one child like our daughter in the province of Ontario. There are many. The feedback that's coming back from the newsprint articles, parents are responding and they're saying, you know what, we've got one too. Where do we turn? You know, we should not have to live in fear of persecution by the state. We should be able to enter into a partnership with the province of Ontario and with the Children's Aid Society, so we can work collaboratively together to get this child help. And that's all we're asking, is that everybody come together under one roof and let's try to help this child, because without the help, there's no hope.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I have been speaking with the mother and father of a 13-year-old girl who cannot be identified under the Youth Criminal Justice Act. We did request interviews with Ontario's Health Minister, Deb Matthews, and Ontario's Child and Youth Services Minister, Laurel Broughton, to ask them about the concerns raised by our guests today. Neither was available to speak to us this morning. We'll take a short break, and when we return, we will hear from the lawyer who represents that same teen and a psychiatrist who specializes in adolescent mental health. We'll also hear from a mom in New Brunswick who has become a lobbyist of sorts in order to try to force governments to help her daughter and others like her. If you have thoughts on this, call us, write to us, go to our website, cbc.ca/thecurrent, and then click on the Contact Us link. You can also call us toll-free at 1-877-287-7366. For other issues, both related to mental health and physical health, go to the CBC's website, liverightnow.ca. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. You are listening to The Current on CBC Radio 1 and Sirius Satellite Radio 137.